committee to order. Representative Olson, would you like to kick us off? And would you like to read the bill? Oh, I have, sorry, my first time doing this. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 539.
Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 539 directs Department of Consumer and Business Services to apply for participation in wellness program demonstration project with the United States Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Andy Olson. I am the state representative from the Albany area. And it's good to see you here today on a Friday, and causes me some concern for mental health as well. You know, being from Human Services, I do have that concern for you. So, anyways, I just want to share with you a little bit about Senate Bill 539 with you, and I think you have a letter from me. But starting off with the second paragraph, Affordable Care Act of 2014 wellness programs in the individual market will be excluded. And this is an opportunity for us through this bill right now. Well, hi, Senator. How you doing? Good to see you here. Okay. The idea here behind this is that Senator Lori Moniz Anderson and I, we were talking about this whole issue, and there's some folks behind us too as well that are going to fill in some gaps with this as well. But it's a great opportunity. There's 10 states that can apply for and receive funding in order to take a look at preventative measures, other areas that we can go to be a lot more effective in what we're doing with healthcare issues right now. And I think that this is a great avenue for Oregon, especially some of the things that we are wanting to try to do already in the state. But, I mean, that's really what I want to encourage you to consider, and that's what this bill is all about, is for us as Oregon to seek that grant of one of the 10 states for this. Now, I want to share this with you, too. I just got this book from a friend, and it's called The Coming Jobs War. And Chapter 11 deals with health care. I find it extremely fascinating. The author of this is Jim Clifton, who's the chair and CEO of Gallup. But I just want to read this one quote to you from him that he describes on some of the things that we can do to fix our healthcare issues. He says, "The big fixes will be found in behavioral economics, because the only way out of this is to focus on and encourage Americans to make different eating, smoking, exercise, and lifestyle choices. Prevention, in other words." I mean, Senator Greenlick, you and I, we've had this conversation. Remember the Japanese official who said Americans had become fat and lazy? Gallup Economics conclude that unless many of the 300 million U.S. citizens change their relationship to their lifestyle, especially the food they eat, there is no way to stop health care costs from spiraling out of control, unquote. So, I mean, that is really almost kind of an indictment, and I see this bill as really being a great stepping stone for us to be on the positive side and being proactive. So I'll stop there.
I have a quick question for you. I'm wondering if that means you love the vending bill.
Can we talk?
That was kind of a joke. Does anyone have a more serious question?
I'm just trying to figure out how politicians will get a job if we don't have fat and lazy people, right?
Senator, would you like to?
Vice Chair and committee members, I'm State Senator Lori Moniz Anderson, and I represent Gresham, Troutdale, Wood Village, and Fairview. And I won't say much more on this. We are the pioneer in the field of health transformation, and we should be leading the way also in figuring out how market wellness programs can really empower Oregonians to make healthier choices. And it would be great to be one of the 10 states. This bill, all it does is require DCBS to work with OHA to come up with the application so that Oregon can be one of the 10 states. So I hope that we can pass this bill and we can lead the way to hopefully doing good, healthy things for Oregonians. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
I'm 100% behind this bill, but I would I would warn you that once we do this, we are going to get tarred and feathered by some of the media for wasting taxpayer money. We haven't gotten to the mentality yet where preventing disease and promoting healthy living is a good investment. And we've had other bills, minor ones, that have been attacked viciously in the press as being waste of taxpayer money, even when there wasn't taxpayer money involved. And we're going to have to be prepared to fight this battle as a state, because I agree with you, this is absolutely the direction we need to go. But it's going to be a hard sell, because any time we involve the government in something like this that's proactive, it will be seen as a waste of money.
Thank you, Vice Chair Thompson. I hear exactly what you're saying, being a public health nurse for years and years and years, and we have never funded public health adequately, and that was our sole goal, is prevention, prevention, prevention. Yep. So I hear you.
Okay, any other questions? Senator, would you like to stay and hear the rest of the testimony on this, or would you like to, for me to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 806?
806 and 621.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Open a public hearing on Senate Bill 806.
Madam Chair, Vice Chair, Committee, I'm Senator Lori Montes Anderson. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 806. I'm not sure you have anyone else to testify on 806.
And maybe we'll have Tyler just read.
If not, I will go in more depth on this bill.
No other testimony. Would you like to just read,
okay,
Tyler?
Sure. Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 806 authorizes an individual licensed to practice medicine or podiatry in another state or country to provide health care services for out-of-state athletic team under certain circumstances.
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. I brought this bill forward because the college sport team physicians actually brought this to my attention, and they often travel with their teams over state lines, and in those cases they have to obtain and maintain licensure in each state that they travel to, even though they're not really providing medical care to the residents of those states. And there's a lot of administrative cost and risk management associated with this. So we had two physicians testifying, one who is with Oregon State. He's a team physician for Oregon State. And then another one in Portland. But this bill basically just exempts the law governing the practice of medicine in Oregon for an athletic team physician licensed to practice in another state, but only under specific conditions, and that is the physician is only providing medical services to the members and staff of that team. The physician is contracted to work with the out-of-state athletic team to provide general or emergency medical care to the team members, staff, or families. The physician does not provide care of consultation to any person residing in the state. The medical services are not provided at a health care facility, and the exemption remains as long as the physician is traveling with the team, not to exceed 10 days. And of course, questions were brought up, what about when the Olympics come to Eugene? But we figured that the medical board should probably be involved with that. We just decided not to go beyond 10 days. So to me, this is a common sense proposal, and I wish all of the states would do that. I know there are several that already have done that. So that is conclusion. It passed unanimously out of committee and on the floor of the Senate. So hopefully you can do so here.
Thank you. And I believe we had another one on physical therapists earlier in the session that started here and is coming over to you.
Oh, okay.
Are there any questions?
I'm just curious how far this is going to go in terms of do we need a statute that allows medical professionals appointed to teams in general, or are we going to do this one person after the other until we get all of them? It seems like we're doing podiatrists and medical people. We're doing trainers in another bill.
Oh, we've done dentists.
We've done dentists? Okay. Well, maybe we already have them all then. It just seems like a blanket statute that says if you're a medical professional, licensed medical professional, traveling with on assignment to a sports team.
That's when I think we really would need to get the board, medical board, on board on this, because I just don't know the ramifications of something like that.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm asking the question.
Okay. No one else to testify on that?
We will later.
We will, so I'll keep it open. I'll keep that one open, and we will open a public hearing then on
621.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm State Senator Lori Monas-Anderson. I'm here to testify on Senate Bill 621. And the purpose of this bill is to just make sure that the decisions made by the Health Evidence Review Commission are made fairly with the help of the information and expertise of experts. As it stands in rule, the Health Evidence Review Commission already appoints temporary members when they feel or an interested party can, the commission can benefit from the information of an expert when they're considering particularly a new technology. And Senate Bill 621 just goes one step further. It allows that temporary member to have a vote on the commission, but only with regard to the technology that they were asked to provide expertise on. And I think there are other people to testify on it that can go into more detail on that for you.
Great. Any questions for the senator?
I do.
Okay.
Hi. Hi, Madam Chair. The thing that troubles me about this bill is that it says that anybody, I think it says that, any interested outside party can request somebody be added for that specific purpose, and that the Oregon Health Authority shall appoint. I mean, it seems to me it says, I say to Goldberg, you're going to have this thing. You must appoint a specialist who can deal with it. And he said, well, I don't really think you need one. And it says, well, but I have a statute here that says, I've asked you, you shall respond.
I don't know the ramifications of a request like that. To me, if an expert was chosen to provide expert information to the Health Evidence Review Commission, that they then could be a part of that decision-making process when it comes to the vote.
Well, it says very specifically, or at the request of an interested outside party, which I think could be anybody, the director of the health authority shall appoint for a specific term one or more.
I would prefer to have Mannheim, because this has been worked quite extensively with the parties involved, and in those particular, when you're getting that technical, I would rather have Nan go.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, Chair Greenlick. My name is Nan Heim, and I'm here on behalf of the Advanced Medical Technology Association. It is true that the bill says an outside party, any outside party, any of you, me, can request that an expert be added to a subcommittee, not to the full commission, just to the subcommittee. That is copied exactly from the statute for the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee. I was curious, and I asked, since we talked, Chair Greenlick, I asked the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee administrator how many requests they've had in the year and a half, and they have had exactly one. And they had already decided on their own that they needed an expert, and they already were bringing one in. And also, this bill was amended in the Senate Health Care Committee to specify that the experts be added to the subcommittees only, not to the full commission. So when the final decisions are made by the commission itself, there will be no temporary members.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Would you have a problem with, as you pointed out, this is the same as the Pharmacy Review Committee. I think we could change that too. Would you have a problem with saying may, or a problem that says shall unless, or something like that? I mean, it just seems to me saying they have to do it just seems a little odd.
Mr. Chair, I would prefer that it remain shall, as the existing statute for the Pharmacy and Therapeutics Committee does, but I wouldn't necessarily object to may. I think that the process, as Senator Monas-Anderson pointed out, it already exists an administrative rule that an outside party or the commission itself may bring in temporary members as experts.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Weider.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sounds like Chair Greenlick and I were think alike as usual. We're always on the same page. So, but I'm just wondering.
I said I can't find that page. Yeah.
That's because both of our memories are going. Question on, I kind of have a little bit of the same concerns with the voting, because you already know how the person's going to vote before they ever come up with them going on. Because if I'm understanding this right, it'll give them voting privileges on the subcommittee?
That is correct, Chair Greenlick, Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, Representative Widener. Yes, and we think that that will accomplish a couple of things. It will help make them actual members of the subcommittee, give them stature, make it easier to bring somebody in. You want them, a lot of them are going to be physicians. I was just talking to the representative of the Oregon Medical Association about this. A lot of these experts are physicians that you're bringing in. You're asking them to take a day from their practice, come in, participate, be a member of the subcommittee, probably lead the discussion. And then you're going to say, well, thanks, but you don't get to vote. And I think, especially given that the final decision is the commission's, without any temporary members, that I think it will work well. It also, I think, will help speed up the process. I've been observing, I've been to probably a half dozen meetings of subcommittees and the commission, and they frequently have delays because they don't have the expertise. They don't have someone there. And so they have to postpone until the next meeting so they can find the expertise. And I have an example. This last year they were considering a coverage guidance on femoral acetabular impingement syndrome surgery. And I arranged for an orthopedic surgeon from OHSU to come and testify on that. And, of course, testimony is limited to 5 minutes. She did a wonderful job. They have since asked her to come back and participate in the re-review of the coverage guidance. And she will take a day from practice, meet with them, probably lead the discussion on the subcommittee. And, yes, I think she should be able to vote.
I would like to do that sometimes here, being in the minority, just to equalize things.
You can vote anytime you want.
Well, just bring in a couple.
You always do get your 5 minutes.
Well, sometimes only three.
The other side of that that I thought about, because I've been having the same discussion with myself, was it might be telling if you have a committee with an outside expert on it, and they vote no on the proposal. Might be kind of telling that to hold it, you know. Maybe we need to ask more questions here. So it's not just they have the power to vote yes, but
it goes on the record.
It goes on the record that the expert on the committee voted against whatever the proposal is. Don't suppose that happens often, but that would be information worth knowing.
Okay. Any other questions? Does Oregon Medical Association want to testify on this? We got a letter. Thank you, Senator.
Madam Vice Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Brian Behring with the Oregon Medical Association. You have our written testimony, so I don't have further really to add to that, other than to say that we see this really as an extension of the public process that's already in place. We are oftentimes tasked with finding these physicians, and we're oftentimes tasked from the HERC of finding very specific physicians for the full slots as well as the specific slots. And the other witnesses are right. It's just being able to find them, get more people involved in the public process, and if that means also the public has the ability to sort of call some of these experts in, it's the public process and we're expanding it, so we see that as a good thing.
Okay, any other questions? Close. Other witnesses? Okay. Close the hearing, public hearing on 621. Are there any other witnesses for Senate Bill 806? Okay. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 806. And are there any other witnesses now for 539? I believe there are. Lou Savage, Janet Bauer, and Jesse O'Brien. Oh, I'm sorry. Lou Savage, Brian Niebert, and Elise Brown. Sorry about that. You all put your name in one little box, so I didn't. You put your name in one little box, oh. So I was reading it as one.
It's your bill. Go ahead.
Thanks, Lou. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Elise Brown for LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon. Nice to be here on a sunny Friday afternoon with hardly anybody else left in the building. So lucky this is a short bill. As this committee knows better than anyone, Oregon has long been a national leader in health reform by creating and implementing innovative approaches to transform delivery and finance of health care. Senate Bill 539 supports that spirit, as Oregon could be one of 10 states demonstrating the impact of prevention and wellness. Everyone knows also that about 75% of today's health care dollar is spent on treatment of chronic conditions, according to the CDC. Four risk behaviors, lack of physical activity, poor nutrition, tobacco use, and excessive alcohol, are the most responsible for adding to that. Chronic diseases are among the most common, costly, and preventive of all health care problems in the U.S. The Affordable Care Act, in its wisdom, created a number of programs to promote health and wellness, which can help reduce the health care costs. There's a variety of things, to include the creation of the National Prevention Council and Prevention of Public Health Fund, et cetera. And one of the other things they did was create a 10-state demonstration wellness project for individual health insurance market. We want Oregon to be one of those in the 10. To be clear, wellness opportunities are not available today in the individual market. Only 10 states that are selected to work with HHS on this are going to be those to apply wellness opportunities to those in the individual market. Senate Bill 539 is simple. It requires DCBS to apply to HHS, and only if the state is selected, it gets to participate in the program. So the state and those participating insurers, and LifeWise is in the individual market and wants to see this happen, will comply with all of the guidelines that HHS sets forth, rules, requirements, and set forth by the demonstration project. We'll be working with Lou at the Oregon Insurance Division to ensure all of those things happen. So we see this as an opportunity for Oregon to take now, in the spirit of what Representative Olson and Senator Manus Anderson said. We want to see this happen, and we hope that you agree that this is a good place for us to be and that we should take a step forward. Thank you.
Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, Lou Savage, Oregon Insurance Commissioner. We support this bill. This is not our bill, but we're supportive of the bill. Healthcare can be broken down into the costs of providing care and administrative costs. And I think we all know that the bulk of an insurance premium is healthcare costs. Anywhere from 10 to 20 cents of every dollar is administrative, and everything else is healthcare costs. Now, wellness programs are not the panacea, but they are a piece of the puzzle. What we would anticipate doing is applying for the demonstration project, and if we're selected, engage in rulemaking and bring in providers, consumer groups, and carriers to put together a program which would be sensitive to the needs of folks who are anywhere along that wellness spectrum. In answer to Representative Thompson's inquiry, there's no money involved in this. It's a demonstration project, so it's not a grant. It's just the ability to engage in this in the individual market. And we don't anticipate, at least for DCBS, any costs. There is a requirement that HHS report to Congress on the results of the project. So we would anticipate possibly doing a data call for carriers to compare what the before and after might look like for specific programs that they engage in. But there's not at this stage, there's not a dollar figure attached to this project. So I'm happy to answer any other questions.
Chair Greenlake, Madam Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, Brian Niebert, Legislative Coordinator for Healthcare Programs for the Oregon Health Authority. We're here to say we're willing and to offer any support we can to this bill as it calls for us, and happy to answer any questions.
Okay, questions?
Thank you. I guess it's for both of you. I've had a chance to talk to the folks before about this issue. I wonder whether there's going to be any real possibility for evaluating what happens. Would there be the ability to design a randomized model, for example, with randomizing patients through? Would you be able to provide expertise for the evaluation? If so, where would the money come from to do that? Will we end up actually knowing anything as a result of this demonstration?
Chair Greenlake, members of the committee, I do think we can look at claims costs, and I don't know how many cycles we would need to really make a good determination. But I do think that there are folks with health issues, chronic disease, and others where there are claims costs associated with that, and how good the data would be just using the claims costs, I'm not sure, but that certainly is one route to gauging whether any of these programs are effective.
Representative Greenlake and Madam Chair, I might just add too that this is a demonstration project, so it would begin, if Oregon is selected, it would begin in 2014 and end in 2017. If we meet the mark, that's set forth by those requirements in the Affordable Care Act and what HHS adds to it as they define the requirements, then there's a possibility that wellness will be extended beyond 2017 in the individual market as a result of this. So that's what our hope is by doing this.
Yeah, I follow on that.
Sure.
Yeah, a demonstration project demonstrates something, and usually at the end of a demonstration project you can say, oh, well, here's what happened and here was the effect of it. And I haven't read the RFP or whatever it comes from HHS, but it would seem to me if we do get this that you would bring some evaluation and expertise to bear so we know what we did rather than, oh, yeah, we offered it to these people, these many did, these many didn't. I mean, I don't know what you have. It seems to me, for example, you could randomize people in this demonstration and make these services available to a random half. It would be easy to have a sense of how did you find something. So just put that in your pipe and don't smoke it. And we'll talk for you.
I have a question. What would prevent you from doing this now?
Yeah.
And what is it that HHS is going to give? Is it technical assistance? It's just part of being a bigger cohort? You're contributing to research? You know, what is it that we're actually getting from them?
Madam Chair, again, to be clear, we couldn't do this now without being part of the demonstration project because you cannot offer wellness opportunities in the individual market, period. So only 10 states that get selected to participate in this will see some opportunity to do wellness in the individual market. So why do we have to have a bill to go through the application process, if that was the question? I think from LifeWise's perspective, as a participant in the individual market, we think this is an important opportunity. We've seen the benefits of wellness in the small group market, and why shouldn't we try and pass those on to individuals? I think it's an important next step. Thank you.
You say you can't offer wellness opportunities. For example, in the individual market, you couldn't offer free health club membership. You couldn't offer free Weight Watchers. You couldn't offer free smoking classes.
Representative Greenlake,
which of those couldn't you do?
You can't do that in the individual market and provide discounts or any.
No, that's what you can't do. So if you're asking what you can do, it's not that you can't offer any of these things. It's that you can't put the whip along with them.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you can't do. And this would allow you to essentially be able to whip people who don't go along with you.
Is it the whip and incentive? It's both sides.
Yeah. Right. We're talking about carrots, right, not sticks.
Maybe.
Okay.
This conversation is a little ironic that we're talking about impediments to pushing wellness when there are no impediments to pushing sickness. And we're talking about a 2014 and 2017 sunset on wellness. You know, perhaps if we did a 2017 sunset on sickness and emphasized wellness, we wouldn't be in the box we're in. But it goes back to what I said earlier, turning the corner and getting people to recognize lack of sickness is the goal, not how to pay for sickness, is going to be the huge undertaking that we are woefully unprepared for. But I applaud your efforts, and I wish we were investing money in this, because I think it's going to take an investment to make it happen as it should. But
Vice Chair Thompson, if I could just comment about a couple things. We would, if we get the demonstration project, we would want to make sure that the rules recognize various health conditions that people have now, income issues, so that there's a broad opportunity for people to improve their health. And in answer to your question, Vice Chair, we as a department would not have needed to come to you to apply for this demonstration project. Certainly understand why the carriers would want this to be a public discussion. But now that we have the bill, not passing the bill would actually be a detriment.
So one more question for you. Do you have any sense of what our chances of getting it? Do you know what other states are vying for it? What's the timeline for the application?
Madam Chair, all good questions, and I don't have the answers for all of those. I think Oregon would have a very good chance just because we're clearly out front on in every way, and would recognize that if anybody could do a good job demoing, Oregon would be in a position to do that. I know that our neighboring state of Washington passed legislation to ensure that they go through the application process too. So I know states are interested in it. Mm-hmm. Again, we want Oregon to say yes to this too.
Okay, any other questions? Thank you. Nancy and Janet.
Good afternoon, Vice Chair Kenny Geyer and members of the committee. My name is Janet Bauer. I'm with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. OCPP is neutral on this bill. What I'm here to do today is to share with you some considerations that I believe lawmakers and Oregonians need to keep in mind as we if we were to get a demonstration. One thing I guess I wanted to clarify based on sort of the previous questions and testimony is that the Affordable Care Act bans discrimination based on health status, and the only exception to that is in wellness programs. In other words, that insurers can vary premiums and impose other costs based on health status. So that's why this program is, wellness programs fit into this, into a demonstration as sort of an exception to the rule. The considerations we see are three. One is to consider their potential impact on out-of-pocket costs for those who are sicker. Wellness programs, as I know you know, may reduce costs for participants through financial incentives. Depending on their structure, those benefits may go to those who are healthier. The result can be increased costs for those who are sicker, and this discrimination obviously is the antithesis of the goals of health reform on both the federal and state level. wellness programs can shift costs from the insurer and healthier individuals to sicker individuals, even if surcharges or penalties are not involved. Another consideration is their impact on low-income Oregonians. Low-income Oregonians will be disproportionately represented in Oregon's individual market once health reform is fully implemented next year. This represents a challenge for including wellness programs in individual plans because of the nature of the population. Low-income people typically have fewer opportunities for safe, accessible recreation, affordable, healthy food, and have environmental factors influencing their health and their efforts to improve it. And low-income individuals are less able to absorb additional penalties or other additional costs. Another consideration is whether they actually do improve health, particularly among high-risk individuals. Some wellness programs have been shown to increase healthy behaviors in the short term. Their effectiveness in improving long-term health is less certain. To conclude, Congress had reason to pilot wellness programs in the individual market rather than allowing them broadly from the start. And so federal and state rules under which these programs will operate will be important in protecting Oregonians, and oversight of their performance is going to be important. We hope that the legislature exercises its authority to monitor the performance of the program should Oregon have a wellness program, and I thank you very much for the opportunity to make comment.
Any other questions before we move on? Okay.
Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Jesse O'Brien, healthcare advocate with OSPIRG, the Oregon State Public Interest Research Group. I will keep this very brief. OSPIRG is also neutral on the bill, but I wanted to just state for the record that we agree with a lot of the considerations raised by the Oregon Center for Public Policy. And while we do very strongly support well-designed wellness programs, we think they can contribute to a cross-spectrum approach to containing costs and improving people's health. There's a real challenge to make sure that these programs are set up in a way that doesn't harm the interests of consumers, and I think it's important to have sideboards in place to protect consumers from price discrimination, and really the devil is in the details of the implementation of this. So I think that we have no reservations about Oregon applying to participate in this program. I think we should go full steam ahead, but we really need to make sure that the way this gets implemented protects consumers. Thanks.
Okay. Any questions? Those are excellent points. Thank you very much. Okay. Anyone else left to testify on 539? If not, I will close the public session on 539 and open the public session on 548. Tyler, can you read us the bill, please?
Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 548 modifies circumstances in which a person issued to dental instructors or dental hygiene instructors license may practice dentistry and declares an emergency effective on its passage.
Madam Chair, Kenny Geyer, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Jenny Mladenovic. I serve as provost and vice president at OHSU. Thank you for letting us testify on behalf of Senate Bill 548 today. As many of you know, OHSU is collaborating with PSU, Oregon State, and the OUS system to build a collaborative life sciences building, the CLSB. The CLSB is currently under construction on the South Waterfront in Portland and will house all the interdisciplinary health and life sciences education. In addition, OHSU plans to move its School of Dentistry into the CLSB with instruction beginning in 2014. Because of this forthcoming change, OHSU, and the Oregon Dental Association have brought Senate Bill 548 to you today. Senate Bill 548 is a technical fix that ensures the OHSU dental instructors are able to avoid licensure challenges as OHSU moves into its new facilities from the Markham Hill to the South Waterfront
and works to expand dental residency programs and positions throughout the state. Currently, when defining the limits of a licensee with respect to OHSU and its dental instructors, the Oregon Dental Practice Act in ORS Chapter 679 uses the term campus in describing the location reserved for practicing dental instruction. However, that term campus is not defined. This means that interpretation of the statute and in turn the boundary of OHSU's campus is left unclear. OHSU is concerned that this lack of clarity could result in overly restrictive interpretations confining the practice of our dental instructors strictly to the current Markham Hill campus. Senate Bill 548 resolves this issue by removing the undefined term campus in existing statute and replacing it with language that is inclusive of all OHSU university facilities. This will allow OHSU to move and expand the dental program without the fear of a statutory language that is open to interpretation. Senate Bill 548 is a technical fix that aligns statutory language with the evolving realities of dental education at OHSU. Thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I encourage your support for this legislation.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Vice Chair Kenny Geyer, Chair Greenlick, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Dr. Jeff Stewart, and I am here today on behalf of the Oregon Dental Association. I am both the Speaker of the House for the ODA and a full-time faculty member at the OHSU School of Dentistry, and I thank you for allowing me to speak today in support of Senate Bill 548. The Oregon dental community is eagerly anticipating the relocation of the dental school and its programs into the brand new Collaborative Life Sciences building in Portland's South Waterfront District. This new building creates a place where our dental students can learn and provide patient care in a modern, state-of-the-art facility. The OHSU School of Dentistry plays an important role in fulfilling the oral health care needs of the citizens of Oregon, graduating some of the best clinically trained dentists in the entire region. The school is a nationally recognized dental research facility and is a sponsor for continuing dental education, in addition to being a place where students and faculty provide important treatment to fellow Oregonians. Senate Bill 548 modifies the current language regarding the dental instructor's license issued by the State Board of Dentistry. It assures that current and future dental faculty members who are holders of this license will be able to continue to practice and teach in the new dental school facility in the same manner that they currently function in the existing dental school building. This change is critical to continue the education and patient care programs at the same high level to which we now hold ourselves accountable. Significant philanthropic investments from across the dental community were needed to make this new building a possibility. We have the building. Now we need to make sure we have the teachers to make a healthier Oregon a reality. I ask for your support of Senate Bill 548. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? We're ready for their weekend.
Great.
Thank you very much. Anyone else to testify? Not, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 548. Close the hearing.
Would you like to say anything? I'd like to say something before we close. Just for the record, we've been held up working on bills because the floor agenda of the House is clogged with House bills that need to get over the Senate for second chamber action. So I'm hoping by the middle of next week we'll be able to start working some bills as well as finishing up the hearings we have in line.
Well, so, will you be bringing us a motion to pass the Senate bills in toto?
One amendment?
Yeah, one amendment.
I think we'll probably have to do it one at a time.
Okay, that's fine.
Thank you.
There you go.
Let's just pass them right now.
Here. See? I follow orders.
I don't.
It's out of order.
Okay, so.
Representative Geyer, Kenny Geyer, you do have the gavel right now, so you can do whatever you want.
I was considering. Okay, so close the House Healthcare Committee. Have a good weekend.
Good job.